No, it wasn't a bad dream. Yes, we did lose to Copenhagen, and yes, we did gift-wrap them 3 goals. It's a Football Fans Podcast and people behind CelticUnderground.net. Right, don't worry, podcast's not too bad. It's not too negative, it's not too positive, it has criticisms, and yeah. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray, talking about the Copenhagen catastrophe. So I'm joined now by Anthony Murray to pick over the bones of last night's performance. Last night, as we record this, against Copenhagen. How are you doing, Anthony?
Oh, superb.
This is going to sound a bit of a creepy question. How did you sleep last night?
It was a strange one because I thought, I was so confident we were going to win. Like, at no point from the minute that draw was made did I not see Celtic in the next round. Just absolute 100% confidence. And then even going into yesterday, it was like, yep, we're definitely going through. And that meant that it wasn't going to be like after the Lazio game where the high was going to be, oh, I can't believe we did it, and then struggle to sleep.
Yep.
So I was kind of like, yeah, we'll win this and I'll go to sleep happy and fine, you know, low energy. And then as soon as that goal went in, the first one, it hit me. Oh, wait a minute, we might not go through. You know, it was a really strange one. And then a numbness that, oh, just... Oh.
The reason I asked that is because I got up this morning, my wife said to me, "You know, did you sleep okay? You don't look that great." "Nah, I slept crap." "Why did you sleep so bad?" "Because I was in such a bad mood when I went to bed. I was in a bad mood all night." To which she then said, "I was childish."
"Aren't we?" You know.
But you're right. See, when the draw was made, I remember saying to someone, they're the sort of quality of team that we might get second last qualifying round of the Champions League, where we should be looking to 2-0 at home, 1-1 away, that type of result. So I said, when we got 1-1 away, I thought, right, so 2-0 at home. Little did I know what was coming. So very quickly, before we get on to that game, because the first leg becomes important, what was your thoughts after a 1-1 away?
I mean, early on, obviously, it felt like, all right, we're better than this mob. And we went out there and, you know, shellacked them for, you know, 30 minutes. And then we didn't finish it off. We didn't take our chances. And then they came out and they seemed to work us out. I mean, you'd have to put it as a positive on their behalf. They read our team, figured out how to stop us, and then came out stronger. And then ultimately you walk away saying, "All right, 1-1's not bad." You know, an away goal, you know, that's the spin you put on it. So it felt all right. You know, like I say, at no point did I not believe we weren't going to go through after the first leg.
Yeah, because after that, I mean, I was fortunate enough to be in Copenhagen and we should have been 3-up, or could have been 3-up by the time we were 1-up. Then they're the better team in the second half, and you think, right, okay, they're at home, but momentum, plus we're 1-up already, so there's an element of we are protecting what we've got. Then Brown went off, and I never felt our midfield got functioning, and I'm not blaming Beaton, I'm just meaning it was almost as if it was completely flat on top of the back four and never got a chance to go into its proper formation after Brown went off. But your point about you go away thinking, yeah, but it was one each, you still went away from that game thinking they had 2 shots on target, a goal and a penalty save. Even when we played badly in the second half, McGregor's shot over the bar, he should have laid on Edward, or had a better shot. The keeper had a brilliant save from Forrest. So even playing badly, we still knew we should have scored, could easily have scored on our 2 goals in the second half.
Like, I guess one thing I'd say was, you know, sometimes we play someone. Like the other year we played Anderlecht, and ultimately, you know, we overturned them over the 2 games. but you know, they have a little player like that wee number 10, and you walk away thinking, oh, he was handy, he was good. And yeah, after the first leg, you know, there was nobody, you're like, all right, you cherry pick them. I mean, solid, yeah, good pros, obviously big athletes, but nobody that you're saying, all right, he's a ringer, you know, he's someone, which, you know, I wouldn't say that now, you know, there's a couple of them you'd probably consider recruiting. But it wasn't like there was clues there that these guys were good, unless there were clues and I just didn't see them.
No, I think you're right. I mean, my perception on that game was the defence obviously lacked a bit of pace, because every time we played over the top of them, we were clean through. And the second half, they played as a unit, pressing us all over the park as a unit and pressing us high, and we don't like that.
Yeah.
And so, last night, the team is announced of Foster in goal, Aya, Simonovic, Julian, Taylor, Brown, McGregor, Rogic, Forrest, Elianussi, Edward. So what did you make of the team when you heard it?
I mean, the gripes that I've had recently is, you know, the sort of Taylor coming in and out of the team. So to see Taylor in the team, I was quite happy. The text I fired to my pals at the start was, it's a gamble banking on Elianussi and Rogic both to deliver. But then I flipped it in my own text and said, but I guess there's a good chance one of them will. You know, so they're both good players. Mm-hmm. You get faith in them both. But I mean, yeah, there was a low percentage chance that they were both going to play well. But yeah, by law of averages, one of them will play a blinder and we'll get away with it. Which is, that's the glass half full, you know, glass half empty. But ultimately, I think in hindsight, you know, it was one that cost us. I know Lennon said Rogic played well. I'd spin it back to the, you know, I can't remember the last time Rogic scored. Maybe it was quite recently and I'm just being an old man. But, you know, a goal-scoring midfielder needs to score goals. If he doesn't, mm-hmm, he isn't. And, you know, he's a waste of a shot. I'm not picking on Rogic. I'm just saying, remember that, I mean, obviously I live abroad. When I get home, when I've been home in the last couple of years, I think Rogic has scored in every game I've been to. You know, I've kind of got used to seeing Rogic score.
You've not been home in the last 2 years then?
I scored the first day of the season last year against Livingston, I'm sure you did. And then over the Rodgers era, even before, he was always good for a goal. You know, he was good for a goal 1 in 3, say. And now we can't, you know, the expectation for Rogic to score isn't there anymore.
No. I mean, I have to put my cards on the table. If Tom Rogic was in the room last night, I'd have wrung his neck.
He's bigger than he looks.
Oh, it's okay. That would have been after I'd have shot him.
Right.
And beat him up with a baseball bat.
So you definitely weren't happy with Rogic, right?
No, I'll get on to the second goal and Tom Rogic's culpability in it in a minute.
I just watched the highlights of that goal.
I can't bring myself to do that.
It's funny because, you know, lumping them in together, those two players, Elianussi and Rogic, in the same box, you get to that point where one of them has to come off. Did one of them come off for Griffiths?
I said to Guy Ronnie, who sits next to me, when Griffiths is getting stripped, and he said, oh, who's going to come off? And he was coming up with all sorts of things, and I said, it'll be one of Rogic and Elianussi, because both of them look done.
Yeah, and there's your gamble. When you know Rogic has basically never played 90 minutes, you know, for the vast majority of his Celtic career, to put yourself in a position where he's the one that has to do a shift, you're like, this is a gamble.
I mean, your point about the glass half full, so I'm an optimistic Celtic fan, so I look at the team and I go, right, okay, I understand the rationale there. He's decided not to play Frimpong because they're a physical, big physical team. The most important thing is we don't lose a goal tonight. If we don't lose a goal, we're guaranteed through. So he's decided it's a more safe bet to play Ayer at right back. Then he's got Aya, Julian and Simonovic across the back four. Three guys, 6'4" plus between each of them. And it's a more solid thing. That's where you persuade yourself before the game, which I suppose is part of the reason why it's dead easy to be a manager when you never have to make the decisions. Because after the game, I'm then looking at it thinking, right, okay. And then I'm also looking at that thinking, and that gives him the flexibility if mid-game he wants to flip it to a back three. He doesn't have to make a substitution to do that. He can just turn it into a black back three, turn Forrest into the right wing back and Taylor, push him a bit further up into the left wing back. And so he's picked that team to give him the flexibility to go three at the back without having to change anything. That's what you say prior to the game if you're an optimist and you're always trying to look for the positive. With hindsight, I now look back and I go, right, okay, so we've either played 4-2-3-1 or 3-5-2.
Yeah.
And when we played 4-2-3-1, we have played Ayer and Julian as the two centre-halves. And when we have played 3-5-2, we have played Ayer, Julian and Simonovic, but Ayer has been the left of the three. And so last night, neither of those things happened. The partnership of the two was Julian and Simonovic. Julian was to the left Simonovic was to the left of Julian, and Ayer, who when we play with the three, he's on the left, is suddenly playing the opposite side of the pitch at right back. As I say, you know, dead easy to be a post-game manager, but you look at that and you think, right, okay, so there is immediately an error in the setup of the team. Then Brown, I was watching the game and I couldn't decide whether Brown is really losing pace and you just don't notice it in the SPL because he's playing against inferior players and his greater game awareness allows him to get into position and so you don't notice his lack of pace, or whether he was injured. But they were beating him all ends up across the middle of the park last night. For pace.
I think the reality of the situation might be that for him, I know he's probably got what more European caps as such. Celtic players, you know, over his extended career. But the reality is for the vast majority of those games, European football might have been above his level. Got the good passing stats in the Manchester City group, you know.
Yeah,
you know, Rodgers got a tune out of him in Europe to an extent, but most of the time, you know, that wee guy that played for Anderlecht or got him around, and there's been loads of little guys like that that have given Brown the runaround in Europe, and now he is older, so it's justifiable. Yeah, he's
3 months off his 35th birthday.
So what it reminded me of was, remember the Hamilton game where he fell back to play right back recently, and basically he was standing on the pitch almost like a conductor, you know, it was shouting and pointing, and then I think Christie came off the bench and maybe Rogic came on, or you know, we won that game comfortably, but by the end Brown was basically a spectator, you know, he'd faded out of that game, and that was before there was any hints of injuries and things. So I think the reality is that Brown's legs are catching up with him. And last night was maybe inevitable. I just wish it had been against a better team than Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking back down the years, you know, when we get put out post-Christmas by Inter, AC Milan or Barcelona, you can say, all right, even Valencia, even a moneyed St. Petersburg, you accept the realities of, you know, the money of modern football, and you shrug and you say, all right, we could have done better there, but we shouldn't have. But, you know, to get pistol whipped at home by Cluj and Copenhagen in the exact same situation is, you know, that's really, really crappy.
And I'll get on to the comparisons with Cluj in a minute, but we'll go through the goals first of all. So, first half, I thought it was reasonably even first half. When our defenders had the ball, when our two centre halves had the ball, doing that thing of passing, pass the parcel backwards and forwards, they were virtually set up as a 4-2-4, and that their front four were pressing us when our back four had the ball. They obviously spotted that our back four can be harassed, and they pressed us, and then we would launch it long, and then they would have confidence in their back four heading it clear, and then two of their front four would then drop into midfield to make it a four. That was roughly what I saw at the game. But I thought it was pretty even, and we had the header off the post from Rogic.
The other good chance was before the header, because I watched the highlights before we started recording. The one where Taylor puts in a good ball and Forrest, for want of a better word, pussies out of
it. He just doesn't go for it.
Yeah, and to be fair, he immediately realises how stupid a mistake it was. He immediately goes, I should have gone for that. But like Sutton in the studio was livid with that. You know, you need to be expecting that. And then, I don't know, maybe that was the moment Forrest's head went. Because, I mean, I've kind of just reached the point where I've got faith in Forrest. You know, when people on Twitter are saying, you know, get Forrest out of the team, I'm like, well, he always chips him an assist or a goal. And particularly in games like this, he's helped out in the past. But last night, it was proper cloak of invisibility stuff. You know, he was nowhere. He did nothing.
I did wonder, they doubled up on Forrest. And I did wonder whether our lack of an orthodox right back. He was better in the first half when Ayer, I felt, played more as our right backs do in terms of supporting the white guy. In the second half, which is, I'm in the North Stand, so it's right in front of me.
Yeah.
There was no support from Ayer. So the compounding problem was the amount of times Forrest went down the wing, they doubled up on him, and he had zero options because Ayer's back up the park, which is, again, getting back to the, you're not playing an author, you're not playing a proper right back. Any other chances first half?
There was, like you were saying, I mean, we didn't always go long. A couple of the times we did get the ball out, you know, into El Yunusi's feet, into McGregor's feet, with Taylor bombing down the left. And there was the one where El Yunusi just bombed it on the break from the corner. Mm-hmm. And then it broke to him and he fluffed the chance with his left foot. But, you know, there was little moments where, you know, we showed our class and we got into a dangerous position. So there was the header right before half time, the Edouard one, mm-hmm. where the cross came in from the right. And, you know, a metre left or right, you know, that would be needing a good save to, you know, Henry Larson would have scored, obviously. But, you know, so there was chances. And like I say, until their goal goes in, no part of me has even contemplated not winning that game.
So I'm going to fast forward to their goal. I've not watched it. I can't bring myself to watch it back, right? You've watched it. So this is what it looked like at the game. North Stand upper, opposite the halfway line. Give you an idea of where I am in the ground. Looks to me, Simonovic turns and decides he's a bit under pressure and he's going to pass it back to Foster. This is what looks like happens. He stubs his toe in the ground just before he hits the ball, so he doesn't actually get virtually anything on the ball. So the ball trundles along, doesn't get to their guy. I'm thinking they're about to score, and then miraculously Julian manages to get a challenge in, and I think, brilliant, we've got out of jail here because we're going to clear it. Then Julian and Simonovic both seem to fall over their feet, and their guy scores. That's pretty much what it looked like at the game. Not watched it back, so I don't know. So tell me how close I am to that.
I think I'm going to, in this situation, I'm going to absolve Julian. Because it's all about the first mistake.
Yeah.
Which is, without any hyperbole, a sackable offence. You know, we never see Yozo again. Yozo's done. Finished. For the rest of the season, youth team centre half, if we need one, or beat on, or no, you know, get out. You've been caught photocopying your arse in the photocopy. Do you know what I mean? Unacceptable behaviour. You're fired. Yeah. Don't come back. Thanks so long, and thanks for all the fish. Cheerio. It's, you know, you watch highlights from the 90s, you know, Tom Boyd at Ibrox, Brian O'Neill with Loudrup.
Yeah.
It's that, but with a rap sheet that's already too long to be forgiven for it. And it looked like it's the exact opposite of what he should look like at this point. I don't know. I always hark on about my old university football career when I'm on this podcast. But, you know, the day maybe you were a second team player or a third team player, but you get called up to the firsts. Mm-hmm. And that's your big chance.
Yeah.
And at the very least, you're working your ass off. And you're so focused and concentrated that you're not doing stuff like that. You might get done for speed. You might get beaten by a better player. But you cannot do something that shit in this... on this stage and get away with it. And I'm getting angry about it, just thinking about it.
So talk me through it, because as I say, the game is one of these ones where it's better to watch it on the telly, because you once you know what's happened, because you then pay attention to how the fuck did that happen. Whereas at the game, it's unfolding in front of you and you're thinking, what the fuck are you doing? And then Julian manages to get in there and you think, Jesus, we've just got out of jail here. And then we still manage to bugger up so that...
I think maybe Julian goes to ground too early. Maybe, you know, he slides in, but, I mean, he's in a sort of panic. You know, it's a panic that should not happen. So Julian kind of does well to get back, but ultimately I think he goes to ground too early. It sort of pops off his stomach or something and the guy just roofs it. But like I say, oh, you know.
But to Simone, if my memory is Simonovic, even after Julian does the clearance, I actually think that's going back out. Simonovic can just run onto this and hoof this up the path.
Yeah, if I think he goes to ground, so he doesn't. He's not running in.
He sort of falls over.
Yeah, I don't know why he does that. But yeah, ultimately, he doesn't get a good enough connection to, you know, blutter it away, which yeah, I guess you're right. He should have done. But the guy, you know, just smashes it in. But it really was, you know, it all goes back to the first domino that falls, and that's Jojo.
Yeah, because the problem then is, from that point, Jojo, who was starting to not look great under pressure from their forwards, looks like a complete and utter nervous wreck for the rest of the game.
Yeah, he's done. He should have been hooked. You know, it's that. At that stage, we need goals. So, yeah. Right, we need to win this game. So we need to go Kevin Keegan. We need to go for it. So at that point, oh, sod it. We'll just have two at the back. You know, they might have picked us off. But to leave him on was just like, oh, what's he going to do? You know?
I did notice when we then, after another 5-10 minutes, Lennon then changes it back to a back three and goes and tells Simonovic to get the other side of the park, miles away from the Copenhagen players who
yeah,
I make them look like an arsehole. And then from that point on, the team is jittery, and you're also noticing, if I think back to our conversation about the first half, there was, in addition to the chances we had in the first half, there was lots of play around the edge of their box where we looked like we were going to create something, and there was dangerous crosses across the face of the goal. That had all dried up. That all dried up in the second half.
But even then, before the goal, we get the Griffiths chance. You know, that's an... Yeah. I mean, that's just one of these ones. You could say it's a great, great save, or you could say, come on, you need to be hitting a space and we're down... The prostrate goalkeeper isn't there.
I do think at the game, I thought that's just a fantastic save.
I mean, the other side of the goal had like two guys there. So really the only space was keeper side, but higher.
Yeah.
And he lifts an arm. So, you know, give him his due. He makes a wonder save. But even then, we're not done. You know, we're not beat. You know, we... Get back in the VAR thing. What was it like to be at the game for a VAR situation?
It adds to the excitement, because the minute the referee stops play, you know. So a couple of things. One, I've read a few people saying, don't pay attention to the way the English do VAR. The rest of Europe does it quite well. It's just the English who've managed to muck up that system. Yeah. And completely make an arse of it. But it's really interesting to be at the game because, firstly, the Celtic players are going really tonto, mental. And actually, yeah, you realise this is the difference that VAR makes, because it's now worthwhile making a big deal of a claim like that.
Yeah.
Because the referee's almost obligated to say, right, okay, I'll send it up the line and ask the guys to look at it. Right? So there's merit in going mental about it. So, and the vociferous nature with which the Celtic players, and particularly Griffiths, was going on about it, you thought, I think there's something to this handball. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't noticed it at the game. But when the referee then stops play, when play's moving on, for it, you know that there's more than a 50-50 chance we are getting the penalty. And then when the referee goes to go and look at it.
Yeah, it was interesting watching on TV, particularly on the back of the Christie one. You know, like even the first replay in the past, you'd be like, maybe we might not get it. But after Christie's one last week, you were, as soon as you saw it, it was like penalty. You know, and then you just watch out the drama and you're like, oh, we're definitely getting this. There's no way we're not getting this. And then
the only thing is, my brother, you know, pointed out, and a few people I think have made this point, you're watching it and you're getting to decide on the screen whether it's going to be a penalty or not. But the 60,000 people in the game are the only people who, watching that game, are not allowed to know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
When we've got big screens to show it. And then the penalty itself, I was not the only person who couldn't watch it. Lots of people around me could not watch the penalty.
Yeah.
Because you just knew if we didn't score it, the deflation in the team would be horrendous. That would be it.
So we kicked that deflation into the future by 2 minutes.
Right, so we get that. And you're immediately thinking, right, the minimum we do here is take this to extra time.
Yeah.
Minimum. Because we're now the team on the high.
Yeah. And the annoying thing was, I had to resort to a dodgy stream last night, because obviously it wasn't on Celtic TV. But I guess it was slightly slow because I got a DM from my mum just saying, oh no. Oh no, you know it's coming.
No, I hate those. If you're ever watching, even like I've watched a game on my iPad, on, you know, BT Sport on my iPad or something like that. So you're about 30, 40 seconds behind and suddenly the messages start coming through. Either the messages you just say, yes.
Yeah.
All the messages that go, oh no, oh for fuck's sake, yeah. I mean, you know. So I'll give you my recollection as best I can from at the game. I've not watched it back, so my recollection is we had a free kick. Which is part of the reason why I think, because my memory is, where's the left side of our team when they score the goal? Because there's nobody there. But my memory is we had a free kick towards the edge of their box. And so that's why McGregor and Taylor were up the park. We muck about, ball comes all the way back. Then it gets played to Rogic. He loses it. Ball goes across to their right, our left, guy goes in and scores. My irritation with Rogic comes on this goal comes from the fact that against Rangers in March, I don't know if you remember, in the last moments of that game, Ryan Kent had a chance to equalise from about 2-3 yards, and Christopher Ayer has a brilliant diving tackle.
Yeah.
Rangers had a corner kick. Didn't work out. Ball broke up to Rogic in the middle of the park, right underneath me. He farts around and loses it, and they play the ball in, and Kent nearly scores. Fast forward to the Lazio game. See the one where the guy has the shot, where Fraser Foster has the unbelievable save?
Yes.
They were attacking and the ball broke out to Rogic in the identical spot. Rogic farts around and loses possession, breaks to the Lazio guy who has the shot. Fraser Foster pulls us out of jail with a brilliant save. My irritation with Rogic is there's two really important games where we're in the dying part of the game, and where he's at when he receives the ball is a place where you don't fart around. At that point in the game, you just make sure you take possession. I know you're not a fan of his. Georgios Samaras would have got a free kick. My issue with Rogic has been I can't think of a decent 90 minutes he's put in for 2 years now. Now, and then three games now in an identical position, moments to go in a game, he's gifted up possession, and twice he got out of jail, and the third time.
You start to realise how good Christie is when he's not there. Now, you know, it's that classic thing.
I felt we really missed Christie and Cham last night.
The word I used to describe it to my pals was, Christie does a hell of a lot of scurrying, you know, just scurrying around, annoying people. I think he's brilliant, beautiful touch, good goal threat, but he also puts in such a shift, and it lets the opposition know he's there. And you know, he might have made that mistake as well, but I mean, Rogic generally looked like a toddler that had been kept up after his bedtime. You know, zombie mode. You know, such a lethargic, pathetic touch.
In defence, after my criticism and rant about Rogic there, in defence of him, the ball is played to him at chest height.
Yeah.
I just don't see why you would think that chesting it back to Scott Brown was the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, it was a disastrous moment.
And it was just so annoying because all we needed to do was take it through to extra time. And we've got 30 minutes. And if they then do score straight as soon as extra time starts, at least you've got 29 minutes.
Yeah.
To score the two goals that you need. So tell me about the game, having watched it back more times than I've watched it at the game.
The goal or the game? Sorry.
The goal.
The third one.
No, the second one. I obviously had my rant about Rogic, but there's more people at fault than Rogic.
The entire defensive three has been pulled inexplicably over to the right, and as soon as Rogic takes that bad touch, they break, and like I say, my mum had tipped me off that this was coming, so as soon as you see it, it's just like, oh no, and this guy just gets the space on the right, one-on-one. You know, can't blame the keeper. The guy just, you know, buries it underneath him. But yeah, that sudden feeling of, oh God, that's us out.
Yeah.
You know, it was Cluj all over again. Just, oh no, now we need to score loads. And the time is not on our side. And then, we just went. The third goal, what a farcical goal. And that's the one where Julian's at halfway point. You know, we've obviously done the big man head up front. We need to salvage this.
Yeah.
But between Brown and Iyer, just shocking. You know, their legs, their heads had gone. The guy just bundled his way through and slotted it. But like I say, like you have said in previous podcasts, the last Cluj goal doesn't really count. You know, it's done. Doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It's not really a fair reflection of how the game went. So it's a bit like that, but this one was more of a knife in the stomach. You know, it really was like, oh, did you need to do that? You know, that was...
It was the fact that we had players around him and he just basically walked through them. But you're right. So much of that game last night reminded me of Cluj. That they were a half-decent team, but you felt we were better than them. And they only became the team who looked like winning once we gift-wrapped them a goal.
Proper.
Identical to Cluj.
Proper gift wrapping as well. Just shocking.
I mean, my son, who's nearly 10, he's not that into football, this morning, and he said, you know, why in a bad mood? And I said, because Celtic invited Santa to Celtic Park. and he gift-wrapped three goals and handed them to Copenhagen. That's what we did.
I think after the Lazio games, Lazio are one of the in-form best teams in Europe. And we went home and away and done them. And then we go and get turned over by really a not very good team. Just what a chance.
I mean, you know, I'm in a couple of WhatsApp groups, and the sort of rational part of us are all agreeing that we were never going to win the Europa League.
Yeah.
So we're going to get knocked out at some point. And this will all be forgotten when we secure the nine in a row. And if we were to also secure a fourth treble, who's going to remember that we went out a round earlier than Rangers in the Europa League? Nobody will be that bothered, because we've just secured a quadruple treble and on nine in a row and or a quadruple treble. But it's the point you've just made about the fact that we are better than them, and we just gifted them progression to the next round. That's what's really galling.
And that's why I framed it in the message I sent to you and a couple other people, that between now and the end of the season, we need to take 4 points off Rangers in the league. Anything less than 4 points exposes a major fault line in what we're up to.
The thing is, I always felt we were a better team than Cluj, and we gifted them into the game. And when we played Cluj in the group stages of the Europa League, i.e. when it wasn't all or nothing on that game, we demonstrated at Celtic Park that we were a better team than them. I mean, we played reserves so it doesn't matter. Which then gets you thinking, right, okay, so in the two or three winner bus games that we've had this season, those are the ones where we've looked god-awful. Cluj, Copenhagen at home, Rangers in the cup final, although we won it, we were god-awful. Yeah. And Rangers at New Year, when they were neck and neck with us in the league.
I mean, we're the definition of the flat track bullies right now. I'd say that maybe applies to Brown for much of his career as an individual, but certainly as a collective right now, that's what we are.
So do you think we'll be able to brush this off and carry on with the season, or do you think this will be a kick in the nuts that we'll limp over the line?
No, because we'll play at the weekend and Christie will be back, and you know, as I think he hasn't been as prolific as he was at the start of the season. You know, at the start of the season, every time he swung his left foot, the ball flew in the top corner. The energy and the eagerness, because he must remember that, you know, he missed the end of last season, although he contributed a lot in the middle. So this is Christie's chance to come in, cement his place in the team and win a title himself, having had a sort of mid-season dip. So I'd be confident that Christie can come in and do that. Hopefully Griffiths, we can get back to two up top domestically and just pistol whip everyone. And we will, I mean, who do we play this weekend?
St. Johnstone in the cup.
Right, so that's good. We've got a good record up there. So, you know, and because it's a cup game, it's that extra incentive that we need to, you know, keep our ridiculously good cup record going. So, you know, back on the horse, brush it off. The test will come when we have to go to Ibrox and really show we are the champions. You know, we are the best team in the country. Which we are.
Again,
we are, definitely.
Yeah, but you could look at, again, one of the things you could look at is last night, there's two aspects to recruitment you can look at. You could turn around and say, and Lennon, I'm sure, could say, look, there were some issues with the team last night. We had Frimpong's not quite fully fit, and he's still only 18, so Elhamed's injured. Brown wasn't fully fit, but I had to play him because neither Incham nor Christie were available, and so I didn't want to be without Brown, without Incham, and without Christie. Elianus is just coming back, and Mikey Johnson's out injured, so that gets us an option down the left. So you could look and you could say all of those things and say, got a bit of a point, right? You could also, Lennon could turn around and say, and the added thing of that is, you don't build a team in just one or two transfer windows. And the thing that really struck me last night, if you consider the amount of times during the Brendan era that people were commenting that it was basically all Ronnie Dyla's signings, bar one or two. There was one Brendan Rodgers signing started that game last night. And that was Edward. You go through, because we went through the team, Foster, Lennon, Ayer, Dyla, Julian, Lennon, Simonovic, Lennon, F. Taylor, Lennon, Brown, Strachan, McGregor, well, you came through the ranks, but it was Ronnie Dyla gave me start.
Yeah.
Rogic, Lennon, Edward, Forrest came through the ranks, and Elianussi, Lennon, Edward, Brendan Rodgers. So it was none of the players that he signed. But the counter to that would be, we spent approximately £6 million in January, and neither of the players that we spent the money on were good enough in the manager's eyes to even get on the bench last night.
That is disgraceful. I've said in the podcast, you know, we need to be given a Jack Aitchison a run out, and you tell me Jack Aitchison's shite, which is fine. I'm happy with that. We've just bought the Polish Jack Aitchison for £3.5 million. Yep. So, as I always go back to, if you're going to have a youth policy like Bilbao or an Ajax, you give your own boy a chance. Why have we gone and bought a guy who might not be any better than the guy we've got? And maybe I'll be wrong. In a year's time, Klimala will be on 30 goals and tearing it up, but you wouldn't be better than me.
But the other point that a former contributor to this podcast used to make on us signing forwards is, if the bulk of the time that we are playing, or a large chunk of the time that we are playing, we've been playing 4-2-3-1. So we've got one striking position, right? So there's only a finite amount of 90 minutes that exist, and there's only one striking position to play in those 90 minutes, right? So if we then sign a potential new striker to get into the team, he's only getting 10 minutes here and 15 minutes there. So over, he might only get 45 minutes of football total over four games, right? So if we sign a £2.5-3 million striker one window, and then sign another £2.5-3 million striker in the next window, we now have two guys who've got 45 minutes between the two of them over four games to start getting in the team. So cumulatively, they're getting 15, 20 minutes over four or five games each. You're never going to develop and learn about those players. So you're better signing one guy for £6-7 million, and that one guy gets all of that 45-minute game time. A bit like when Edward came to the club and we had Dembele, and we spent, okay, it was a loan, but eventually we bought him. All that money on £9 million on Edward, instead of our normal practice, which we reverted to once Brendan's left, of the equivalent of, you know, we buy three Edwards. And then actually what happens is, with Klamala and Mbayo, neither of them are getting sufficient game time to develop themselves, but both of them are getting such infrequent game time that their reputation diminishes.
Yeah, their stock's dropping.
And so all we're doing is spending £6 million and wiping out the value of both of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Awful. Another thing, I'm just looking at my notes quickly.
Yep.
I mean, in the first half, it's obvious when the ball's going to the box, if you've got two guys in the box, you've got a good chance one of them will get the break, or the first one or the second one. So you'd rather the Elianussi or the Rogic chance drop to Griffiths, perhaps, argue. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about Griffiths, corners. As soon as we got a corner and you realised, like, I think it was Elianussi went over to duff it into the near post. Yeah. You're like, we've scored loads from corners recently. Who's been hitting them? Christie and Griffiths. They're our corner takers. So yes, Christie can't play. Griffiths, you're our corner taker tonight.
And that was in the first half, getting back to my, we were creating chances in the first half that we weren't creating in the second. I don't know how many corners we had. Off the top of my head, 6 or 7 in the first half. And every single one of them was that wafty, floaty. I think the first one was McGregor and didn't beat the first man. And thereafter it was Elianusi. And they were into the right area, but not with any pace. And not at the right height. They were that sort of floaty, lobbed in. The type of thing that I would have the quality to do.
And the one that we tried to overthink it, where we took a short one, we fed it to the guy in the corner. He fed it to McGregor. McGregor's 25 yards out on his wrong foot.
Do you know, every single... So I'm watching 3 or 4 corners where they're wafty in, and I could see where McGregor, where Forrest was and McGregor was. And I actually said to Ronnie next to me, I said, you know, our corners have been shit. Maybe we should just try playing it out to Forrest and then McGregor. The problem with that was, that was the only person who had that thought process in his head was Elianusi, and certainly McGregor was unaware of the possibility of it, because he's not prepared for it when it comes to him, and it's on his wrong.
The roles should be switched. If they're going to do something like that, they should have it in place that it will be a Brown or an Elianusi or an Edward. The guy that's there is going to be able to shell it with his right foot.
So we're out. So your score for Sunday, we're playing St Johnstone Sunday, what's your score going to be?
3-0 win, confident that, I think St Johnstone have been playing okay recently, but
they have, they got a draw against Scotland's second best team last week,
and so I'll always bet on Griffiths and Christie to deliver against Scottish teams. So, yeah, I'm confident.
Do you think you'll get your wish and Simonovic will be a million miles in the team? Problem is, if he plays 3-5-2, Simonovic, unless Elhamid plays for the reserves on Monday.
And what happened? Remember the boy that came on against Hamilton?
Church. Was it Church?
No, it wasn't Church.
Welsh.
Is he, I imagine if he's in any way, shape, or form fit, he will jump Jozo in the queue. And deservedly Welsh. So.
Yeah, I just wondered if Elhamid would finally come back after 4 months out, because he played for the reserves. So I actually had thought, when I saw Elhamid playing for the reserves on Monday, I thought, wonder if it's only a reserve game. I wonder if actually he's getting a run out because he might make the bench on Thursday night. But nah.
But no, we'll bounce back. Do we play next midweek?
Yeah, we play Livingston away next midweek.
It never stops. I'm quite enjoying it right now. So, we'll get, that'll be a tough one. Yeah, because we lost it.
Yeah, tough one because they're physical, and that's what we don't like. And they have a plastic pitch, which is the other thing we don't like. They have the double whammy. And then, of course, post-split as the top six teams sit just now, we'll have played all of the top six teams away from home twice, so we are due to play them all at home, but we can't play them all at home because we've got to have 19 and 19 games. So I am absolutely convinced that if Livingston make the top six, we'll end up playing Livingston 3 times away this season.
At least we'll have won the title by then. It'll be wrapped up, no danger.
Yeah, right, okay, you're going with 3-0.
On the plus side, one last thing, Jozo never gets used on AstroTurf, does he?
So no, so we won't be there. That prick. Right, with that, Anthony Murray, I will say thanks very much. Hail, cheers. Hail.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So hopefully that wasn't too bad a listen to, and we covered the main points. Anyway, we've got the St Johnstone game on Sunday. And as I said in the podcast, when we lift the 9 in a row and hopefully even do the quadruple treble, this result will be a long way away. But their half hour turnover, half hour average attendance, half hour wage bill, we should do better than get knocked out by teams like them. We've got the Celtic FC Foundation Zipwire. And skydive, if you're interested in that, Google Celtic FC Foundation.
there's some very big announcements from them coming up very, very soon. So keep your eyes peeled, listen out. Some big stuff at the beginning of next week. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Anthony Murray, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.